I call this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order. And a quorum is present. And before we begin our first item today, I did just want to take a moment to thank Co-Chair O'Driscoll for his leadership and for running such a great committee and setting an example for how this committee should run and how we want to continue to run this committee. And so I hope that I will be able to live up to how he has conducted the work of this committee. So thank you, Rep. O'Driscoll, for your leadership. Representative O'Driscoll.
Representative Herr, I have worked with you on other committees, and you have held the gold standard yourself as well. So I think that this can be the model of how things can be done as we're in the middle innings here at the legislature as we move to the final. So happy to be partnering with you in this committee.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. So on to our first item of business today. Representative Finke, have you had a chance to review the meeting minutes from March 13th, 2025?
I have, Madam Chair. I have one edit for them. I am not listed in the present members on the minutes, so I would like to request that edit.
Okay. Representative Finke moves approval of the meeting minutes with the correction of adding her name for the March 13, 2025. Any discussion? No discussion. Hearing none. Then all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. And the motion prevails, and the minutes of March 13, 2025 are approved. So on to our first bill for the agenda today. We have Representative Breyer for the medical cannabis provision modified. And so, Representative Breyer, we're going to, for now, move to lay your bill over for possible inclusion. We are waiting for one of our members to get here. And so what we will do is if you could just go ahead and talk through your bill and just explain to us what the bill is, and then we'll go through and start with your amendments, okay?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair Elkins, Co-Chair O'Driscoll, and committee members. House File 1672 is an Office of Cannabis Management Policy Bill. It proposes small change to the medical cannabis program. These changes prioritize patient protections so they can access the medical products that they need. As we transition the state from a medical cannabis program only to an adult use and medical licensing framework, the goal is to continue refining the program to support patients. These changes help to do this while also adding to the overall clarity of the bill. And Interim Director Tobel is here to go over these changes in more detail.
And Representative Rye, would it be okay if we went over the amendments first and then have the testifier speak? So the A2 amendment is the first one, and Representative Rye, I understand this is your amendment?
Yes.
Okay, if you could explain the A2 amendment.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Herr. The A2 author's amendment adds a subdivision. It establishes access for visiting patients. And this establishes reciprocity for non-Minnesota residents. This definition also incorporates reciprocity for tribal medical cannabis program patients, which is currently the status quo and already allowed in Chapter 152 for the state's medical cannabis program. This proposal ensures that there is no disruption for tribal medical patients as we transition to the new statute. In addition, the A2 aligns wording in the protection section with the rest of the proposal that was missed in initial drafting. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Breyer. And if we could go to Mr. Tobel, the Interim Director of Office of Cannabis Management, if you want to speak to the amendment and to the bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. This bill does a number of important things. I think the top line thing it does is ensure patient access through streamlining and making available the use of virtual consultation for patients. This is especially important for patients who may not live near their dispensary, and those dispensaries sometimes have difficulty finding pharmacists or cannabis consultants who can provide the necessary service to patients. The current way it's structured is that pharmacist has to be on site in order to put the specific label on the product. So this makes that change. Otherwise, the section addresses reciprocity of tribal medical patients in current law that's already available under 152, and it seeks just to continue the status quo for tribal medical patients. There's also some increase in the protections afforded to patients. In terms of patient registry being denied access to things like housing, employment, and the like. We increase and strengthen those. Our customer service team says they get about 25 emails a week. with people who are concerned about school, their landlord, healthcare facilities, or employers. And so it's really trying to address those people who are having issues as medical registry patients in those key areas. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Topol. And what we will do is just ask if maybe, I know that we have the amendment in front of us, we haven't voted on it yet. We we're gonna wait to vote on the amendment. So I'm just gonna actually ask if there's anybody in the audience who will also like to talk to testify to this bill. No one? All right. So any member questions on the bill with the A2 or on the A2 on the A2 amendment? Any questions? All right, then we are. All right, members, so we are gonna lay the bill over right now, and Representative Breyer, if we could maybe just have you and your testifier wait a little bit, and we'll bring the bill back up for a vote after all the members are present. And so I will go ahead and lay House File 1617 over until later in the hearing.
Thank you.
And Representative Hewitt, would you go up to the testifiers table, and up next is House File 1877. Representative Hewitt moves House File 1877 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Hewitt, do you want to talk to the bill first and then we move the A1 amendment, or would you like to get the bill in the order that you'd like it before we begin?
Yes, if we can move the amendment, Madam Chair, first, that'd be great.
Okay, Representative Hewitt moves the A1 amendment. Any discussions? And Representative Hewitt, could you just give us a quick explanation of what the A1 amendment is?
I sure can, Madam Chair. Get to my notes here. Basically, the A1 strikes additional language requiring multiple signatures for corporations or associations. It seems like a cantankerous process, and the department really wishes to change this in the bill.
All right, any discussions to the A1 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Hewitt, onto your bill as amended.
Yes, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for listening to the bill today. This is primarily a departmental bill that's technical and changes. For the several last days, I've been reviewing the 35-page bill, and I encourage you all to read it. There's many changes on every page, mostly just one line. To say that, I'd like to turn it over to the department so they can explain any changes so the members can feel comfortable with the bill.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. First as far as is Eric Talbell. If you could just identify yourself for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Eric Talbell. I'm the Interim Director of the Office of Cannabis Management. This bill is our housekeeping bill, and it is a series of small changes that are designed specifically to help us move forward with the licensing process in both the medical, or in both the adult use and hemp spaces. We do a number of clarifying changes that are designed specifically to make the process of applying easier. For instance, there were some places where something may be included, but separately it was required to be included elsewhere, so we strike the permissive and stick with the requirements. It also makes a number of changes to Chapter 152, which is where the current medical cannabis program is. We anticipate that program going away relatively soon with the licensing of our medical combination businesses, but understanding that there is a possibility of delay, we want to make sure that our medical cannabis patients do not lose access. You'll see a number of conforming changes in 152, specifically changing commissioner to director to reflect the fact that OCM runs the program at this time. We also clarify a number of authorized activities for different licenses to add consistency between licenses and allow cultivators to sell their products. For example, there was what seems to be an omission that didn't allow cultivators to sell directly to certain license types. So we've clarified those sort of things. Finally, there were some places where we think there were likely typos where a customer product endorsement was referenced in a headnote rather than the consumer product, which is the defined term. So that's the sort of scale and scope of the changes proposed within this section. And then we'll note, too, that in both the hemp licensing and the cannabis licensing, the office is striking a requirement for corporations to sign twice. The application already includes multiple attestations and signatures by someone who says they have the authority to bind the entity. And so we have found in the application process that the two signature requirements is unduly burdensome to industry, and we think there's no benefit to the agency in having that. Thank you,
Director Topol. Before I go to member questions, are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Seeing no testifiers, any discussion, members? All right, no member questions as well. Representative Hewitt, any final comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to commend the department. This is, I'm sure many of us have gotten calls on this, but they really want to get this right. We want to get it right. So, I mean, this is part of the process of making sure all the technical changes are before we launch the retail market. So thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing the bill.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. And so we will be laying this bill over. Representative Hewitt moves that we lay the bill over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. We're going to bring Representative Ryer back up to the table with her testifier. Thank you, Representative Ryer. And so the earlier motion was to lay it over. We will be, House File 1672, we will be referring to that to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. And so back to the A2 amendment. Could you just briefly describe the A2 amendment again, Representative Ryer?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. A couple of things that the A2 Authors Amendment does: it establishes access for visiting patients, which establishes reciprocity for non-Minnesota residents, and then it also incorporates reciprocity for tribal medical cannabis patients, and that's the current status quo. It's bringing in the permissions in Chapter 152 for the state's medical cannabis program. So this way, there'll be no disruption for the tribal medical patients as we transition. And then it aligns wording in the protection section with the rest of the proposal. Something was missed in the initial drafting.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. Any discussion to the A2? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the A2 amendment is adopted. Representative Ryer, onto the bill as it is amended. And I don't know if any members, do you need her to describe the bill again with the amendment? No, okay, all right, then we'll go to, Director Tobald, you had already talked to the bill and the amendment. Is there anything else you wanna add before we go to member discussion?
No, thank you, Chairman.
All right, any member discussion? Questions for the Representative West?
Just very quickly, wanna thank Representative Ryer for working with me to improve the bill, and I will be supporting it.
Thank you, Representative West. Any further discussion? And again, any members from the public wanting to testify on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Ryer, any final comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I appreciate working with both the Office of Cannabis Management, with Representative West, and ask for your support.
Thank you so much. Representative Ryer renews her motion that the House File 1672, as amended, be re-referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay.
No.
The motion prevails. House File 1672, as amended, is referred to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. Our next bill is a West bill, House File 1735. And Representative West moves House File 1735 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative West, to your bill if you are ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1735 addresses a concern in the wholesaling industry that currently wholesales hemp-derived THC beverages. Because that is a federal legal product and they are licensed federally as wholesalers, there was concern about, well, we don't want to accidentally maybe get a cannabis wholesaler license, which is a federally illegal product, and run afoul of something there. So trying to address that is what birthed House File 1735. The language you see before you is the first attempt It is not in a state where all the stakeholders are on board yet, and it doesn't address every concern. So we have the wholesalers here with us today to go into their concerns. And I would assure everybody with interest in this bill, my goal is that all stakeholders are happy. I think this is just a small thing we can address without completely reinventing the wheel here. But if you do have concerns as we're working on it, please let me know, and we'll work on addressing them. But without further ado, you can go to the testifier.
Thank you, Representative West. Our first testifier is Brant Irwin. Mr. Irwin, if you could identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Brant Irwin. I'm the president of the Minnesota Beer Wholesalers Association. I'm here in support of House File 1735. It would allow wholesalers that are currently selling these low-potency hemp-derived THC edible products to continue to do so. I want to thank specifically Representative West and Representative Stevenson for their continued work and support on this issue to be resolved. As Representative West just identified, there's a current gap in licensure for low-potency products. If a manufacturer wants to manufacture only low-potency hemp edible products, there is a separate license that authorizes them to do that. If a retailer only wants to retail low-potency hemp edible products, there is a separate low-potency retailer license that allows them to do that. If a wholesaler only wants to sell and wholesale low-potency hemp edible products, they don't have that same option. So this legislation would fix that gap by simply allowing wholesalers that are operating right now to continue to do so in the same manner in which they've been operating for the last few years, which have allowed these products to not only enter but thrive in the marketplace. We've worked with Representative West, Representative Stevenson, and the Office of Cannabis Management for the last several weeks, as well as other industry members, in an effort to resolve this issue. We'll continue to do so in order to find the best solution available. And I'll be available for questions, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Irwin. And we'll get through all of our testifiers before we take questions, and so they can all just be available at the same time. Our next testifier is Joel Carlson. Mr. Carlson, if you could identify yourself for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Joel Carlson. I represent the Minnesota Wine and Spirit Wholesalers, and I don't have much to add to Mr. Irwin's testimony. I agree with everything that he has put in front of you. This is an important issue for us, and particularly for the wine and spirit space, because we have a statewide footprint. So our wholesalers kind of cover the whole state, as opposed to maybe a regional territory that a beer distributor might have. So it's really important that we get this gap fixed, because we have members that don't want to move into the full cannabis space. We appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Our next testifier is Carl Moss. If you could come up to the testifiers table. Oh, Carol, my apologies, Carol Moss. Thank you so much for the grace. If you can identify yourself for the record and begin.
Good morning, Carol Moss. I am the head of a cannabis industry practice group at Helmuth & Johnson. I've been privileged to work with multiple clients who have created successful wholesaling businesses in the hemp space, and we have been reaching out to OCM about our concern on this wholesaler gap. And I absolutely commend the Representative West and the others trying to fill this gap in. Though House File 1735 is not the proper way to do it, and I am here to speak against the bill. There is a problem with it, multiple reasons. First, it's the only time in Chapter 342 where a license granted by a different state agency would allow a business to operate in the hemp industry. It uses a definition from the wholesaler from the liquor laws. Second, it unnecessarily creates more problems than it solves. There are easier, more equitable ways to tweak current language that allow hemp wholesaling across different types of businesses. Third, you're placing a significant financial difficulty on the businesses that are not liquor wholesalers that want to continue wholesaling hemp. Their options are either to pay thousands of dollars to get the cannabis wholesaler license, or $15,000 a year for a liquor wholesaler license. Yet a hemp manufacturing license are only $500 each. Fourth, it creates a registry for businesses that are licensed liquor wholesalers as of April 1st, 2025. And that effectively blocks out any businesses from obtaining a wholesaler license if they are needed to stay in the space. And fifth, it purposely favors one industry over the other. If the legislature is willing to accept a liquor wholesaler license to wholesale hemp, why doesn't also accept a tobacco wholesaling license? Finally, the mantra that we've heard of legalization is do no harm when it comes to the hemp industry. And we have multiple successful businesses in Minnesota that want to stay in this industry or that are outside of the liquor industry. So I commend the committee for taking this issue on and looking for a solution. Unfortunately, this is not the way to go about that solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moss. Our next testifier is Michael Borger-Pepin. Are you here? Thank you. And please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Mike Borger-Pepin. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. I am here representing Get High, which means to life in Hebrew. An applicant for a cannabis wholesaler and transporter license in the current application period. And I wanted to speak in opposition to this bill as it's currently written. My background is in beer distribution and also in liquor retail. We developed at the retailer I was working at one of the premier selections of THC beverages in the country, nationally recognized for our performance in the category. As written, the language of this bill is problematic with regard to equity within the low-dose hemp THC beverage space. My company, Get High, has applied for a cannabis wholesale and cannabis transporter license with the intent that we specified in the checkbox for product of distributing only low-dose hemp beverages and edibles to Minnesota retail customers, with the primary focus being on the liquor channel. With that license, there are a number of requirements for conducting business legally that are not present in this bill. In this iteration, there is no requirement for a hemp importer endorsement, maintenance of imported items in the state database, facility and delivery security requirements, requirement for randomized deliveries, or that no fewer than two employees can make deliveries to retail partners. All of these are required of any cannabis wholesaler, regardless of the product set that is being distributed. The omission of these requirements for the low-dose hemp distribution license proposed under this bill, despite being deemed necessary for safety within the original cannabis legislation, creates a disproportionate burden on any cannabis wholesaler who seeks to create a business space within the low-dose hemp market. Furthermore, the bill is written such that holding an alcoholic beverage distribution license is a prerequisite for obtaining a low-dose hemp wholesaler license. This exclusionary path does not afford any other business the opportunity to pursue this license type as a course of business. I believe that the final legislation should seek to provide a safe, regulated route to market for all Minnesotans with regard to low-dose hemp products. It should not, however, tilt the field disproportionately towards one group of wholesalers at the expense of the rest. I've met with Representative West and had a productive conversation. He was great to discuss our concerns. And we really appreciate that. It's also been brought to my attention that there's potentially some new language that will be proposed, and I look forward to reviewing that at the appropriate time. And I would like to thank the committee for their time today.
Thank you, Mr. Borger-Pepin. And then our last testifier is Bob Smith. Are you Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Yeah. My name is Robert Smith. I'm a director at Granite City Jobbing. We are a licensed wholesale distributor located in St. Cloud, Minnesota. I'm proud to be a third generation of a family-owned and operated business that wholesales and distributes product across our entire state. We supply a variety of products to our customers, including snacks, paper goods, beverages, tobacco, CBD products, and low-potency hemp products, which is a significant part of our business. Our retailers include a lot of different varieties of customers as well, from convenience stores, gas stations, tobacco shops, liquor stores, grocery stores, hemp retailers, corner markets, you name it. We often are selling to independent, small, family-owned businesses as well. House File 1735 specifically allows liquor wholesalers to purchase and sell low-potency hemp products if they register with the state's OCM. Yet, for the past 7 years, since the Farm Bill in 2018 was passed, Granite City Jobbing has been selling low-potency hemp products to hundreds of retailers across Minnesota. Since we sell tobacco products, our company has decades of experience selling highly regulated products. However, House File 1735 does not permit other kinds of distributors like Granite City Jobbing to register to buy or sell low-potency hemp products to any retail stores. My purpose of testifying today is to ask the bill authors and the committee to consider amending House File 1735 to allow other licensed distributors, particular tobacco distributors, to register to sell low-potency hemp products as a hemp wholesaler, and to do so without disrupting the existing hemp industry. Doing so would allow for a more competitive marketplace, and Granite City Jobbing, along with other similar distributors, to continue to lawfully sell low-potency products across our state. I thank you for your time, and I'm open to try to answer any of your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Before we go to member discussion, is there anyone in the public who would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we will move to member discussion, and the first person on the list is Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative West, for your work on this bill. You know, we've been working on it together, and I think it's clear that there's still some more work for us to do. I think, you know, we have three different bills, despite the fact that this is kind of a cannabis day. We have three different bills on the agenda today that really are more about these low-dose hemp beverage products and their popularity, and it's really a testament to the success of this little experiment that we've had in Minnesota. These beverages are a real economic opportunity for Minnesota businesses. We're leading the nation in them. It's the fastest growing area of beverage selling in the adult beverage industry. You know, I can't tell you, I've talked to several brewers who have said that they would have gone out of business but for the opportunity to make these products. And I think the intent of this bill that, you know, Representative West and I have is to just allow for that to continue. We're just trying to allow for people to do what they are currently doing once the new licensing regime comes into play. And I think we've heard today that there's some holes in the approach that we currently have, and I know I appreciate Representative West's comment that we're going to keep working on it until all the stakeholders are satisfied. I think we can get there. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Next is Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure if Representative West or Representative Stevenson is going to be able to answer my question, but earlier this session we had a concern about needing to move a bill like this or this one or similar to it because of some gaps that were perceived to be in state law to be able to allow these low-potency beverages to be able to be marketed in Minnesota. Can either one of you enlighten me why this is changing or why we're moving? I thought there was some regulatory rulemaking or some other things that had resolved this issue, and now it's before the committee again. I'm not, again, sure if it's Representative Stevenson or Representative West, as they've been partnering on this. Madam Chair.
Representative West is signaling it's him, so Representative West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair O'Driscoll. So the deadline is now more in the fall, whereas before there was little crosswires on it needing to be done before the license application window closes. The reason the fall deadline, it's now more of a ambiguous fall deadline, that's when the hemp industry moves from Chapter 152 into 342, and that merges it with the cannabis issues that get into the federal sticky wicket place. So it's not as time sensitive as originally thought, but it is still a time sensitive issue.
Follow up, Representative Odishko.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair West, to that point, Representative and Chair Stevenson said that there were three different bills that kind of addressed this. How do you see this shaking out? And I realize we haven't brought the other two bills before the committee yet, but are they three different approaches to this or three different problems that are being solved that need to be resolved by this ambiguous fall date that you're referring to?
Representative West.
Well, I would say that's more to bringing the stakeholders together and seeing where they want to land. It's not my intention to have anybody harmed in this venture, but making sure everybody can participate who is participating presently.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to clarify, when I said there are three bills, they're not all about this wholesaler problem. There's okay. three bills about sort of dealing with different things that have come up around these THC beverages in the new licensing structure. The other two bills aren't about the wholesaler.
Any further follow-up? Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Any other discussion? Seeing no other discussion, Representative West, any final comments?
No.
Nope. All right. Yes. Then this bill is laid over for possible inclusion. Next up is another West bill, House File 1734. And Representative West moves House File 1734 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. We will go ahead and move the A1 amendment first. Representative West, would you like to move and describe the A1 amendment?
The A1. Hello, members. So House File 1735 deals with social equity applicants. The A1 amendment is something that we discussed last year, I believe. The department will verify this, but I believe it was the original position of the department to have a 51% equity requirement to be qualified as a social equity applicant. I wanted to make sure that this gets brought up for discussion with the committee since we're dealing with the bill that has to deal with social equity applicants, because this is something that will benefit many people who are getting started in this industry. I know the DFL really wanted to help those who are harmed by cannabis and made those qualify as social equity applicants. One of the ways we can help them is allow them to raise more capital, because that is the biggest constraint on starting a new cannabis business, and allowing them to sell 49% instead of 35% will only help them in the market. And since we're dealing with social equity applicants in this bill today, I thought it was appropriate to bring it up for the committee's discussion. And without that, I believe OCM also has some comments on it.
And Mr. Tabal, is this the comment on the A1 amendment or the bill in general? I just want to make sure we move the amendment first.
Madam Chair, a comment on the A1. I would just note that the OCM's bill last year used a 65% mark, not as sort of a policy discussion introduction, that we recognize that there was a commitment by many to have those licenses fully owned by social equity, but also an understanding that greater access to capital requires some loosening of that. And so I don't think the office necessarily had any particularly hard and fast commitment to any sort of number, but that number put Minnesota above most states and sort of kept us as like a leader in the space with specifics. And then the only other note that the agency would have is that this weekend, our licensing application portal did close, and we're currently reviewing applications in the social equity space with that 65% threshold. And so cognizant that changes with sewer effective dates might impact review, we would ask that consideration be taken into that review process.
Representative West.
Madam Chair, I didn't thank you for bringing that up. I neglected to mention one thing that I that would be included in this amendment if we were going to pass this out into law today would be an effective date that makes it so the Office of Cannabis Management does not need to redo anything that they're already doing. The last thing we need to do is delay this even further. So we do agree if we were to move forward on this policy that it would have an effective date that makes it easy for the department to implement.
Thank you, Representative West. Any discussion to the A1? Seeing none, all those in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Any oppose? The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative West, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an OCM policy bill that has to deal with the social equity portion, and I will turn it over to the director to go over.
Director, if you could identify yourself for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Eric Tobel. I'm the interim director for the Office of Cannabis Management. This bill is, again, sort of clarifying application processes within the cannabis space. There's two particular things that occur. One is the just organizing what's required so that the requirements are clear to applicants and there's not any duplication between sections of what is required but also may be required. And then the second portion of it does remove that two-officer signature that I discussed earlier that we found to be not necessarily helpful to the application process. And ultimately, we think is solved for by other parts of the application.
Thank you, Mr. Tobel. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we will move to member discussion. Members, any questions to our bill author or the testifier? Representative Finke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative West and Director Tumble. I just would like to help clarifying, as we lower the percentile for social equity applicants so that they can partner with others to help raise that capital, right? Are we decreasing, will we simultaneously decrease the number of social equity applicants who are granted access into the program?
Representative West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Finke. I would not characterize it like that. What this does is increase the chances that the social equity applicants can succeed in their business. It's a very capital intensive business. One of the criticisms of the bill was the loan program to help people start businesses was like $50,000. And it's like, great to help people, but that's, you're going to need a whole lot more money than that to really get things across the line. So allowing them to do this, I think we're going to see a high attrition rate in the first year of these businesses opening, especially considering potential supply constraints. So allowing them to access more capital would increase the number that survive, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up, Representative Finke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate that, right? The two things that we, you know, I remember I had conversations with Chair Stevenson about the bill when we were moving this bill, right? And the social equity component was extremely important to me in regarding the success of this bill. I don't actually care about cannabis, but I care about righting the wrongs of, the war on drugs. So I just want to make sure we're not setting people up to fail. Like, it feels like perhaps that was what was happening with the original loans, right? We're not giving enough money. We're not giving enough support. We're giving people access to a business, and then we're just letting them fail. And I want to make sure that what you're doing, what your fix is doing, is helping people succeed, but not at the cost of the right that we were trying to do, right? Diluting the number of people who have access to the thing that we were trying to do. I recognize that that's a balance. I appreciate any thoughts from either of you about how to make sure we're not limiting access to what the intention was, while also not setting people up to fail, as you said, Rep. West. That would be a much worse outcome.
Representative West.
One thought that I had when you talked about the total, does this decrease the total number of applying? We could still have two individuals who qualify as social equity applicants make up the 51%, so it can be something that's broad that still allows the maximum number of people to participate.
Any other comments, Director Tauble?
Thank you, Chairwoman and Representative. I would just note that the law also contains a pretty robust true party of interest provisions that ensure that the people that own 51% have ownership and control of the business. And I think that those provisions, at whatever threshold we set for majority ownership of social equity status will help ensure, to your point, that the people intended to benefit from the social equity program will continue to benefit from the social equity program.
Any further follow-up? Right, any other discussion? Representative, Co-Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the Director, just maybe you can help me globally with what a roadmap on this might look like from OCM. We're involved in litigation right now with the applicants in the pool and in assigning where licenses should go and the priority of those licenses. Word is also out now from whatever means about a potential compact. Can you, in the context of those two things, talk about how these loans and some of the other things may end up playing into this? I know that I've been getting calls in my office from both sides of the issue, and I want to know what to tell them. And you as a director may be able to provide some guidance for us.
Director Tauble, and if you could pull the microphone closer to you, or maybe come in a little bit closer to make sure everybody can hear.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chairwoman. Thank you, Representative. I would note that one thing that is happening right now is that both DEED and DLI have announced their initial requests, their RFPs for the grants that they're in charge of. Those include some of the revolving loan grants that Representative Stevenson mentioned. It also includes some of the workforce development pipeline grants that I believe DLI is in charge of. And so we're seeing, as the office is approaching its launch of the full licensing adult use market, that those other kind of, for lack of a better word, wraparound services are also entering the marketplace for these applicants and these businesses. I think with respect to the sort of full nature of the market, all of those pieces, I think, are moving towards the start line at the same time. As you mentioned, compacting is an ongoing negotiation. There's no compacts that have been signed as of yet. The application window closed over the weekend for the adult licensing. And then we are also working with, obviously, the low potency people and the medical programs, which continue to operate. And so I think from my vantage point, everything is sort of coming towards the market at about the same time in a way that I think will help us launch in a way that gives enough space for anyone who's interested in getting into the cannabis space to have a fair and real chance at success. I'm not sure if that answered your question, so if you want to rephrase, you're welcome to. Obviously.
Co-Chair O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Director, we're close, but we're not quite there yet. On the answer to the question, I have people who have been reaching out to me, and they've testified in front of this committee previously that they've followed every requirement that's been put forward, and they have not been able to be awarded from your office a license, meeting the different requirements, maintaining a line of credit and capital at cost of burning fuel on the runway to be able to enter this industry. And they're concerned that with the word of the compact coming out, that they may be disadvantaged. And for the benefit of this committee that has oversight of OCM, we're just trying to figure out what the playing field is, because it shifted here about 30 days ago. And as you mentioned, the compact is being negotiated, but it hasn't been executed. And that has really raised the temperature for a lot of people, and quite frankly for the folks in this space and the people in this committee, of how do we deal with those, because we're not hearing anything from your office or the administration, and they're having access to us as members of the legislature to answer those questions. And so I'm going to be pretty pointed, because that is a huge issue that faces us in this legislature right now.
Director, do you have any comments to that?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. Our demand study anticipates that we need about 1.5 to 2 million square feet of canopy to satisfy the Minnesota demand for cannabis products. At present, the state has somewhere in the neighborhood of 60,000 square feet. So we're coming up almost 100% short of what it is we anticipate we need. As we start to onboard both state licensees and tribal operators who are operating both on reservation and may operate off reservation, there's a lot of space to fill that. The state licensees and the, have caps of 30,000 square feet at the highest, 15 for the middle, 5 for the lowest. It's going to take a lot of operators for us to fill in that 2 million square feet of canopy. And I think that the sense that people have that only one business or one type of business or one group of people is going to quote-unquote win in the Minnesota market, I don't think is true. Other states that have legalized have often legalized on the back of large and substantial medical industries where there was a limited amount of space, where the space left in the market was de minimis. That's not the case in Minnesota. In Minnesota, what starts here now is de minimis. It's almost virtually irrelevant to our launch, because there's just not enough square feet of canopy in the state to satisfy the demand. And so, as I noted, I think that we're going to be in a place where all of these different constituencies are entering the market at relatively similar times and positions, and each of them will have a fair and real opportunity to build their business. Those people that are already building facilities will be in a good place as we start to review those licenses that just came in. And in the first years, you know, the businesses that are best positioned to succeed, I think, will succeed.
Any follow-up, Representative?
This is my final follow-up, Madam Chair. To that point, the legislature is in a very awkward position, and it's hard for us to sit here today with a little more than 2 months left in this legislative session to know what laws and what rules to put in place unless this process is more transparent. We respect the fact that a sovereign nation has the ability to be able to do what that sovereign nation wants to, but as it interacts with the rest of the state of Minnesota, who are the applicants that have applied for, who are still on hold. We don't know how to be able to put that space together for those individuals, and we're simply just trying to navigate and negotiate our way around, quite frankly, in the dark on this, and hoping that we find a doorway that we can open and solve our problems. And your office holds a lot of keys to that for this legislative process, and so we hope that you'll continue to be transparent with us and working on these issues. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Co-Chair O'Driscoll. I will just say real quick before I go to any last discussion before we go to Representative West's closing, is that I have had a number of meetings with OCM and especially facilitated conversations between different groups who have had questions or have felt like they have been excluded from the process or that there has been lack of transparency. And I would like to just say thank you to OCM that every time I've asked for you to come to the table, you have done that. And there were many issues with the process from the beginning. And each time you were given information, you went back to try to rectify situations and made sure that people were whole. And so I trust that OCM will continue to work through any issues that are coming up. And I just wanted to thank you for that openness. I would encourage all of our members to visit with OCM themselves, but also we've done a couple of cannabis tours, both on our sovereign nation lands and also at existing facilities. And it does help clarify a lot of the questions that we may have. I think sometimes complexity looks like lack of transparency, but I think this is a very big endeavor, and I appreciate the work that you are all willing to put into this. Any further discussion from our members? Seeing no further discussion, Representative West, any closing remarks?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair O'Driscoll, for those questions. That is something that is kind of hanging over those who are applying as social equity applicants. I'm sure many of you have heard their displeasure when they feel like they've been set up and shifted around. This amendment that to this bill does help them in their situation, and hopefully everybody can start at the same time and we can have a fair, even level playing field going forward. And with that, I believe we're laying it over.
We are, Representative West, so this bill is laid over for possible inclusion, which also gives us more time to continue to work on it. Thank you, Representative West. And our last West bill, I think, yep, this is our last West bill, is House File 1272. Representative West, I'm sorry, 1271. And so, Representative West, if you want to move House File 1271 to be labeled for possible inclusion, we'll have you do that, and then we'll move the A1 amendment as well.
All right, I'll move 1271 to be laid over for possible inclusion and move the A1 amendment.
And if you could just describe the A1 amendment before we go ahead and vote on that.
So the A1 amendment has one clarifying, well, technical fix, I would say. The definition in 342.01 and 342.46 for compliant products and hemp-derived edibles actually list different cannabinoids. Well, one lists fewer than the other. The department in our meetings has said our intention is 342.01 is the definition to be used. So this amendment makes a change by bringing that over, and it also addresses a concern I've heard from many, 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 many hemp retailers on non-intoxicating cannabinoids. Everybody agrees an intoxicating substance should be well regulated. And for these non-intoxicating cannabinoids, the level set in the cannabis bill were going to make many products illegal that are currently legal and being sold right now. You can get them shipped to your door. You can buy them today. There's clearly not any tremendous public safety risk in regards to these. We know these substances are safe. If they were not safe, we would be certainly hearing about it regularly because it's being sold today across the nation, but also in Minnesota. So this adjusts those limits to allow basically all the products. If I would say, honestly, a limit is unnecessary, but in my efforts, just like on the social equity amendment, my efforts is to try and work with something that we can actually pass. And I think putting the limits at this particular level does get us there. And it's a discussion I want to have. You know, we're just laying this over, but I want to have this discussion as we go on with the greater cannabis bill.
Thank you, Representative West. Any discussion to the A1? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any oppose?
No.
The motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. We have another amendment at the desk, the A2. Representative West moves the A2 amendment, and if you could just describe the A2.
Oh, well, actually, I probably mixed up the amendments. That was correcting a subdivision, that first one. And remember everything I just said on this one.
Okay, can we maybe then, I want to make sure that we understand the difference between the A1 and the A2. Representative West, maybe if we could go back and look at the A1 amendment, and if you could describe, what was the A1, if you could relook at that.
So the A1 amendment is not a 420 joke, first of all. I already got that. it corrects an improperly cited subdivision, so it's 100% technical in nature.
Thank you, Representative West. I am going to actually, do I have to undo if we voted that one? Because I'd like for us to revote on the A1. House Research, can we just kind of clarify procedure for us? Since we voted on what we thought the A1 was, I want to make sure that we are all voting and understanding what we are voting for.
Madam Chair, members, if the committee wants to reconsider it, there'd need to be a motion to reconsider the adoption, a vote on that, and then remove the amendment. If the committee doesn't want to reconsider it, if they're satisfied with the actions that have been taken, it's already been adopted, considering it's a technical amendment.
All right. So procedurally, is there anybody who would like to reconsider the A1 passage? If not, we will just then move to the A2 and move that. All right, seeing that there is no reconsideration, then we are at the A2 amendment. And Representative West, could you just re-discuss the A2 amendment for the committee before we vote?
So there's a definition of, thank you, Madam Chair. There's a definition of lower potency hemp edible in 342.01, and then there's a definition of compliant products in 342.46. Those definitions should be aligned, and it was just an oversight that they weren't. So I pull that definition to bring it in line, and then I increase the limits on non-intoxicating cannabinoids. This is an ongoing discussion that we've had that I would like the committee to have as we move forward on a cannabis bill. Currently, these products are sold in Minnesota and nationwide. The non-intoxicating portion is what we're talking about. It still will have a 5-milligram limit on THC or any intoxicating cannabinoid. And the reason for this increase is so that more of the products that are currently offered on the market today that are safe, that we do not have a considerable public safety risk, or else we'd be hearing about it right now, can remain legal when the hemp industry goes from being regulated under Chapter 152 to Chapter 342. And this is something that I've heard from many, many, many people in the market. And, you know, our goal is to, as a testifier said earlier, do no harm. Let's let everybody succeed, have everybody have a chance. And that is the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Representative West. Any discussion to the A2? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted. Representative West, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The 1271 is another Office of Cannabis Management Oversight Agency bill, and I will turn it over to the Director to go over it quickly.
Director Tobel, if you could just again identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Eric Tobel. I'm the Interim Director for the Office of Cannabis Management. This bill does three things, most of which are in reaction to feedback we've gotten from retailers and consumers. The first is to make a change that allows for sublingual application of non-intoxicating products. We've heard that it's basically a labeling issue that these products exist, people use them, but we prohibit the labeling of them as used for sublingual application. So we simply remove that requirement. We also create some consistency between the two hemp license types. Currently, the hemp retailers are required to have buildings that meet fire and safety codes. There's no parallel requirement for manufacturers. We think that was a good requirement, so we recommend including that requirement for manufacturers as well. And then the final piece is, again, a sort of relic of the transition from the prior regulatory scheme in 151.72 into 342. Which is that in 342, there's only one kind of product that can use a QR code to deliver pertinent information to people who are purchasing it. So we just seek to remove that allowance because it's not allowed anywhere else within the cannabis and hemp space.
Thank you, Director Tauba. We do have one other testifier who signed up ahead of time, Kayla Fearing. If you could make your way up to the testifier table. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning, committee. My name is Kayla Fearing, and I am owner of Healing Fear Consulting. It is a patient consulting business that helps patients learn about cannabinoids. I am also a pharmacy technician here in Minnesota's healthcare systems. As a pharmacy technician, I legally sell drugs that can kill someone in an instant by being just over 1 milligram off on a dosage. Every day, I give patients drugs that are covered by their medical insurances that come with a partnering prescription of Narcan in case they accidentally overdose at home. With cannabis or any cannabinoid products, you don't have that fear. Regardless if it's a 5 milligram THC product or a 300 milligram CBN product, which is my personal standard dose. When a legal state-run cannabis program begins putting caps and limiting medicines for their patients, patients go directly back to the black market. People are looking for relief. That's why they seek out these state cannabis programs to give them the products that they're looking for. Minnesota right now has a flourishing homegrown community because people are looking for higher dose products that don't just have THC in them. Realistically, patients don't care about the laws, they care about feeling better. As Representative West stated, you can get these products shipped to your door right now within 24 hours. They should be able to provide, Minnesota should be able to provide patients with locally made and processed cannabinoid products that benefit the entourage effect. And if you don't know what the entourage effect is, committee, I highly suggest you look it up. It's a very nice medical component of cannabis. Patients should have access to products with higher amounts of CBG for GI issues, CBN for nerve pain, or CBC for new cell development. There should not be reefer madness about cannabinoids that cannot get you stoned. Therefore, I'm a huge supporter of the A2 Amendment and HF 1271. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Veering. And before we go to member questions, are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? Seeing none, members, any questions? No member questions. Well, we are just sailing through this then. Then Representative West, any final comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I must be pretty good at explaining bills. Well, and credit to the director as well, but I thank the committee for working with me on these issues.
Thank you, and so this bill is laid over. And our last two bills are Stevenson bills. So if Representative Stevenson, if you can make your way to the testifiers table, the first bill before us will be House File 1634. And Representative Stevenson moves House File 1634 to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Stevenson, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So as I mentioned, we have now two more bills that are kind of primarily focused on these very popular THC beverages. You know, this is a product that really had its birth here in Minnesota and is really generating a lot of economic growth here in Minnesota and also around the country. And, you know, the combination of Representative West's wholesaler bill and these two bills are really
well, Representative Stevenson, one, I don't mean to interrupt, but can you just pull that mic closer so people can hear you? Thank you.
The combination of this bill as well as the wholesale bill is really designed to just allow people to continue doing what they are already doing. So in the House File 100 cannabis legalization bill that we passed in 2023, there's a provision limiting a license holder to only having one license type. And this was part of our effort to not allow too much consolidation, any one person to have too much influence in the cannabis marketplace. And for the most part, stand by that model. But we ran into a little hiccup here when it comes to one specific area. So a lot of cities, maybe probably most members in the room, have a city somewhere nearby or in their district that has a municipal liquor store. They are selling these THC beverages. As I mentioned, you know, while a lot of the liquor industry is stagnant or in decline, these THC beverages are very popular and are keeping a lot of businesses afloat, including some of these liquor stores. Some of the cities that have municipal liquor stores are interested in opening municipal cannabis dispensaries, which was allowed under the House File 100 bill. But if they do that, they will have to stop selling these THC beverages at their municipal liquor store because they only have one license, and that would allow them to have that cannabis dispensary, which means they would no longer be able to get the license to sell the THC beverages at the municipal liquor store. So this bill just makes a narrow exception to the one license rule and would allow a city that has a municipal liquor store to continue selling those THC beverages at their liquor store even if they open up a municipal cannabis dispensary.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson and Chair Stevenson. And there are no testifiers who signed up ahead of time, so I'm going to move to any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill. Seeing none, members, any questions? Representative Katiza Watun. Chair Katiza Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson, for bringing this forward. My local liquor stores in Eden Prairie are all municipal, and I think that, you know, this is a popular product. It's seeing growing success, and this I think this is a much-needed change to help us ease the transition forward.
Representative Stevenson, any comments to that? Or
no, I agree.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, any final comments, Representative Stevenson?
The only thing I'd add is if you have a municipal liquor store in your district, you should learn about how your city's using those proceeds. It is a chance for a lot of cities to use money for some excess good. One of the cities I represent, they use it to purchase and repair playground equipment, which I think is great.
Thank you, and this bill is laid over. Our last bill for today is House File 1615. Representative Stevenson moves House File 1615 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Stevenson, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is another beverage-related bill, and it's relatively simple. So when we passed House File 100 and set up some framework around these low-dose hemp products, we, for beverages, allowed you to have up to 10 milligrams in one container, but that's would be 2 5-milligram servings. And what this bill just does is allow you to have a single serving of 10 milligrams. So this is actually more kind of about the packaging than the actual content. And it really just allows these companies, which are now operating in several markets, to have similar packaging across multiple markets instead of having to have something specific for Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. We do have a testifier who is testifying via Zoom, Glenn McFresh. Do we have Mr. McElfresh on?
McElfresh works great, Chair.
Thank you. If you can identify yourself for the record and begin the testimony.
Chair Herr, Chair O'Driscoll, committee members, and Chair Stevenson, thank you for allowing me to speak today on House File 1615. I'd also like to thank Interim Director Taubel and the OCM staff for their tireless work ethic. I'd also like to recognize, I'd also like to apologize that I wasn't able to be there in person, but I appreciate the opportunity to testify remotely. My name is Glenn McElfresh, and I'm here today as a co-founder of Plift, a lower potency hemp beverage company. I also own a cannabinoid emulsion company and sit on the board of the Hemp Beverage Alliance, which includes more than 200 hemp beverage brands and ancillary businesses. I've been fortunate these past few years to help hundreds of entrepreneurs launch their lower potency hemp beverage. And the most common question I get is, where should I launch my drink? My answer is always Minnesota. Minnesota has an amazing regulatory framework, thanks to the great work of many of you 2 years ago. It also has educated consumers, stable growth, and retailers, distributors, and manufacturers who support the category at every scale. Minnesota is an easy recommendation for me because it's also born out of my own experience. Minnesota was Plift's first market and is home to four of our great employees, Sean, Bruce, Carlin, and Bree. However, in the past 12 months, both new and well-established beverage brands are choosing to forego launching their products in Minnesota because the nuanced labeling requirement prevents brands from being compliant with both Minnesota law and the laws of certain other states. In Minnesota, a lower potency hemp beverage can have up to 10 milligrams of THC per can, so long as a can contains no more than 2 5-milligram servings of THC per can. However, states such as Georgia and Kentucky currently do not permit multiple servings per container, and states like Rhode Island and Illinois are contemplating legislation that would not permit multiple servings per container. The only way for a Minnesota brand to work around this issue is to significantly invest in packaging materials, which is not tenable for the majority of brands, or launch in a new market without their top-selling 10-milligram drinks. House File 1615 is a simple fix for this problem that permits brands who sell a 10-milligram drink to label that drink as a single 10-milligram serving of THC with only one serving per container. This change will keep in line with the spirit of the law that caps THC beverages at no more than 10 milligrams of THC per can, while evolving with the national hemp beverage regulatory landscape, which shifts regularly. House File 1615 will also allow Minnesota businesses to export their great products to other states and allow other out-of-state businesses to throw their hat in the ring and see if their brand can compete with the best of the best in Minnesota. Chair Herr, Chair O'Driscoll, members of the committee, and Chair Stevenson, thank you once again for the opportunity to testify today. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. McElfresh. He is our only testifier today, so I'm going to ask if there's any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill. Any members? Seeing none, we will go to member questions. Any questions for Representative Stevenson? Representative Katiza-Watoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Stevenson, I think that this makes a lot of sense and will definitely help our small businesses. I just, and maybe the question is to the testifier actually, about for people who are new to these type of products, if they have no idea how many milligrams they maybe should or could consume in a single serving, are brands potentially considering some sort of recommendation on the package, even if it doesn't say that it's two servings, so that they can still continue to sell it in states that have these limitations? I'm just curious. I mean, I feel like somebody who has never potentially tried a THC beverage before and drinks an entire 10 milligram can, they may not necessarily be expecting the benefits or effects on their body in that ensuing time frame. So I'm not sure if you have thoughts or maybe the testifier has thoughts. I have a little bit of concern when people don't necessarily know what they might be getting themselves into.
Representative Stevenson, and I think that your testifier would like to respond too, so I don't know if you have any comments first.
And I would be interested in Mr. McElfresh's response to this question. I guess my comment would be twofold. One is, it's important to say that this allows 10 milligram servings, doesn't require them. There are 5 milligram, and I think I've seen products marketed that are even 2 or 3. And so somebody who is concerned about that and paying close attention certainly could purchase a product that has fewer milligrams. The other comment that I would make is that these products are a little bit different than alcohol, and that exactly what response will be elicited is not, it varies more from person to person, right? And so it could be something of a challenge to really put on packaging, this is what to expect, because it is kind of different from person to person and dependent on some factors that the person putting together packaging would have no idea what the consumer is bringing to the table. But I would be really interested in what Mr. McElfresh has to say about it too.
Mr. McElfresh?
Chair Herr, Chair Katiza-Watoon. I also agree with everything that Chair Stevenson just said. I think, to the point of the specific question, here's a Plif 10 milligram, and I apologize for using a prop. It's illustrative. You can see at the top that's labeled as 10 milligrams of THC per container. And there's also an indication that there's 5 milligrams of THC per serving. So essentially the law already covers this requirement whereby a hemp beverage brand must on their labeling clearly say how many milligrams are in each container, as well as how many milligrams of THC are in each serving. On the Plift can, we have, I believe we have the number of milligrams per can like 8 times. So I think most brands, especially all of the leading brands, are certainly, doing everything in their power to clearly educate the consumer on how many milligrams are in their can. As far as educating the consumer, I think there's a significant number of really great retailers. Every retailer in Minnesota goes out of their way to educate consumers on these products. And they generally say, hey, if you're a first timer, start in that 1 to 3 milligram range. If you're new to this, or if you're a little bit more comfortable, go with the 3 milligrams to 5 milligrams, and then 5 to 10 if you're a pro. I know Total Wine has printed trifold brochures that they leave by the area, and the staff at all of the leading retailers in Minnesota are extremely well educated. So, I think this change will, simply allow businesses to flourish and grow that view this as an opportunity to grow nationally.
Thank you. Any follow-up, Representative Katiza?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that was really helpful. I mean, I think that as long as the retailers are able to support people and give them a little bit of background education before they maybe potentially try this a new product and kind of match them with what they might be looking for. I think that this is a good change for these small businesses so that they can continue to sell across the country. Thanks.
Representative Stevenson, as a non-user of these products or a very frequent user, I think that I would have needed to see the products up close and try them. So I hope that you consider that next time when you come in. Representative Cha.
Thank you, Chair Herr. I just want to follow up with Representative Katoon's comment because being that these products are new to Minnesotans, I've seen cases where people do consume more than one can, and it has, kind of like very effective benefit to their body. And so I think that as legislator, we need to think about having a conversation more about how we can educate the community on these products. Thank you.
Any comments, Representative Stevenson? Thank you. Any further discussion on this bill? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Stevenson, any final comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill.
All right, members, this bill is laid over, and there are no additional business in front of us. And so I, Representative O'Driscoll, did you have any comments before we adjourn? Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. And so then with no more further business before us, we are adjourned.